It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
And greetings, happy Tuesday. Welcome to the Steve Day Show here live and on demand on Blaze TV, radio, and podcast. Steve Dace here with Todd Erzin, our former intern Victoria, filling in again today, as she will be for the next couple of weeks for Aaron, who is on paternity leave with his wife Bella, and their new baby, number two, Abigail, joining Ben as the McIntyre clan continues to grow, and we congratulate them. As we mentioned yesterday, the show without Aaron here, it'll be a little bit more of a stripped down version. Instead of Aaron's montage to start off every show, that's kind of his thing. We definitely didn't want to step on his toes. We don't think anybody could do it better anyway. We're going to kind of do it as we used to do back in the day, where a couple of big picture things that kind of caught my eye since we signed off with you yesterday are how we're going to lead off the conversation, because a lot of times those big picture worldview things will be itemized further and get into more and specified further the more we get into the show and start addressing specific topics. So we'll get into that here in just a second after we tell you about our friends over at First Cup Coffee Company. They have a flavor for every freedom loving American. They make first and foremost great coffee, number one, and then number two, they also do so while supporting your values, so you don't have to give your money directly to people that hate you in this case. And if you're like a lot of Americans where coffee is a food group, Aaron would be one of those, by the way, make sure you check out our friends at First Cup Coffee. The roast on date is there on each bag. It is shipped to you within days of being roasted. All right, just check them out and get 10% off with the promo code DACE, my last name, at firstcup.com. Firstcup.com, promo code DACE to get 10% off at firstcup.com. And if you subscribe, you'll get 10% off for the life of your subscription as well. And then again, I'm going to keep promoting this until I am assured every single person that tunes into this show has watched this, because that's how good it is. I mean, it should be mandatory viewing for every American. It's our latest Blaze original, bought and paid for, how politicians get filthy rich. I think it might be the single best piece of content our network has produced in the 5.5 years that I've been associated with it. It's among the best pieces of and most impactful pieces of content that I think the righty media has ever produced. Going back to when I was buying Rush Limbaugh's books, I think it's somewhere maybe that notch right below, you know, that and God and Man at Yale level stuff. That's how good and important and impactful this is. You can watch it right now at DaceOriginals.com if you're a Blaze TV subscriber. And if you go there, you can become one for $30 off with the code DaceOriginals. All right, you don't want to miss this. DaceOriginals.com. Use the code DaceOriginals to get $30 off. All right, coming up on the show here later today, we've got a couple of guests lined up for you on the show today. Riley Gaines is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll get an update on the latest with the battle against the NCAA. We're into April now, and a lot of spring national championships are taking place around the country. There was another guy that was dusting women over the weekend that, of course, that would have been a major highlight in Aaron's montage if he were here. So we'll get into all of that with Riley Gaines at the bottom of the hour. Walter Hudson is a legislator from the state of Minnesota. I met him at an event I did for legislators in Minnesota about a month and a half ago, and he's one of us. I mean, literally. I mean, like, he's a fan of the show. He's in this audience, and we're just going to pick his brain at the end of the program on what life is like when you attempt, kind of your thing, Todd. About, yeah. I want to run for office because I just need to see what this is like, where all this overwhelming pressure and everything comes from, right? Well, he's getting a chance to see how the sausage is made, and it just so happens to coincide with a time that the Democrats are trying to make Minnesota the California of the Midwest here in one legislative session. So we're going to talk to him about that coming up in the final segment of the show. And then in between, for Pop Culture Tuesday, we're going to talk about lessons learned from Nefarious. It's been 1 year since the release of Nefarious, and you stop and think about how many times it got talked about on the show for years and updates on the production and all the drama that went into the production and everything else. The thing opens. It lasted 8 weeks in theaters. And then it's like, did that ever happen? It was like, you know, feels like it was 5 years ago. Except some of the things that I experienced and learned during this process have changed my life. They're gonna last with me for as long as, you know, the Lord allows me to live. And so we'll get into some of that for Pop Culture Tuesday, because I also think that they also, I think, confirm the importance of this arena. I got a phone call from a good buddy of mine yesterday. He's very successful. Your typical American self-made guy. I mean, grew up in poverty, didn't have shoes when he went to school. Now he has his own plane. Okay, he's a very successful businessman. He's probably listening right now too, frankly. And he called me yesterday. And he's like, we got to do something about this. I mean, we cannot allow this to end like this, you know? And so we had a broader conversation about what are we lacking on the right. And one of them that I mentioned to him specifically, we will discuss the next hour of the show, okay? But let's get into the opening here. And I think it is important for us to deal with the disease more than the symptoms when we can. Sometimes the symptoms are so acute, okay? You have to deal with the symptoms at that moment. Say I get a gunshot wound, right? And I'm bleeding out, okay? You'd like to go in, perform the surgery, remove the bullet. You see, you'd like to do all of that, right? But I'm bleeding out, right? And so the symptoms of that gunshot wound are so acute that we've got to stop that bleeding or do what's called triage, right? Right now, okay? With the hope then that once the bleeding stops so we don't bleed out, then we can go in and get rid of what caused that symptom and remove the bullet and, you know, sew things back up and help the body via the tissue process and everything else is then over a period of time able to heal properly, correct?
Meatball surgery, yes.
Yeah, but if we don't stop the bleeding, we never get that opportunity.
Exactly.
Okay? And a lot of what we do in righty media is symptom-based. And I know you guys know I'm not shy about telling you where I think we fall short as a movement or industry. But in this case, I really don't think this is our fault, because we're getting hit and sprayed with so many bullets all of the time that it feels as if there isn't time to talk about how we actually got here and undo it. Doesn't it feel like even with the good guys that we get elected, doesn't it just feel like they're forced to do just triage all the time? We can probably talk to Walter, our Minnesota state legislator, about that here, yeah, about an hour and a half from now. You know, he would, I'm sure, and I've had these conversations with my buddy Chip Roy for the last 3 or 4 years. All right. He would love, like, Chip's got a hearing today on COVID, you know, and he's got a kick-ass statement that he's going to unleash. Like, this is the stuff. Okay, you know, not wanting all the suffering that went along with these decisions, but this is why a guy who survived cancer and survived previous stints working in Washington, D.C., this is why Chip Roy is flying from Austin to D.C. every week, okay, because it was to get in this level of existential fight, attack evil and corruption right at the root, right, and root it out. But it just seems like it is so, it's like, as you like to say, Todd, a hydra. It's so systemic a lot of times, it feels like we can't do that. And so we're just trying to perform triage, right? Stop the cost of living going up over here. Do this something about you, right? And sometimes the solutions, by the way, that are required, or that because we feel like we're in a desperate situation, we think are required. Sometimes those quick reactionary decisions, I mean, there's nothing, being reactionary isn't inherently bad, right? What's a paramedic? A form of a reactionary, right? Are they the actual doctor?
No.
No. But are they the ones that are often performing that triage so then the doctor can do his job later? Yeah. Because they're reacting to the symptoms, what the symptoms are causing in a person at that moment. So there's value in being reactionary and within context, right? Okay. But at some point, if we don't address the root cause of a problem, then the symptoms just get further and further exacerbated over and over again. And now it kind of feels like that now, right? You know, like we didn't want to address the root cause of what led to the redefinition of marriage in America. And so, because we didn't want to address that, it was uncomfortable. It was divisive. That led to more acute symptoms. People started losing their jobs because they didn't want to adhere to the new definition. People started losing even their own companies. They started losing their commissions as officers because they didn't in the military because they didn't want to adhere to the new definitions. The symptoms then grow. All right. Now we're having Riley Gaines, who frankly, as a successful, beautiful young woman, should be cashing in on endorsement deals from being a multinational champion, and she's newly married and planning a family. Right. That's what at her age. That's, and given her success level as an athlete, that's what she should be doing.
She was going to go to dental school. Yeah.
And in previous generations, in generations that weren't too long ago, that's exactly what she would be doing right now.
Yes.
Right. Instead, now she's risked being turned into a pariah. She has greatly limited her wider marketing approach and, or appeal, I should say, to the broader public, because there's an acute symptom at work in the culture right now that is being used as a catalyst to just erase women and what they mean to society altogether, right?
Yes.
Okay. So again, because we don't want to address the root cause of a problem, the symptoms grow. They get more acute. They get worse. All right. And you close up one wound and another opens up. Okay. And this is kind of what it feels like to be on the American right in this day and age. Are you guys with me so far? Am I drawing a fair word picture of kind of this would be our problem, even if we didn't have people that wanted to sell out for clicks or grifters or cowardly politicians, even if those things didn't exist, and they're always going to exist because it's an imperfect world to some degree. Even if we had a real vibrant movement, this would be a challenge for us. Anyway, correct?
Yes, the always going to exist part is currently on steroids, but other than that, I agree. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, like Jesus said, the poor will always be with you. Mm-hmm. He didn't say go out there and intentionally, therefore, do policies that will make the problem more acute and spread great levels of poverty on a systemic level throughout your society. That's not the same thing, no. Right?
And the multitude of our idols right now are just a colossus.
Correct. On our show, what I want to do, and this is why we've emphasized the biblical worldview so much from the beginning, it's because I think there needs to be at least a few. I think there's great value in those that are on the front lines fighting, pushing back on the symptoms, okay? Before my mom became a nurse, she was a nursing assistant. She was an LPN. She did some of this paramedic. She did some of this triage work. Okay. Before now, she does the work of the actual healing in some of these cases. There's great value in it. Right. I mean, somebody needs to be there trying to hold the gate of Mordor back from fully dropping and everything, all of everything empties out of the black gate. Great value in that. But we can't win a war that way, can we?
Right.
No, we can't. You cannot win a war. That's a defensive rear guard action. Eventually, the numbers overwhelm you and you can't sustain that. Eventually, you have to go at some point. You've got to go on offense and force them now to defend their foundations. Right.
Yes.
All right. And from the beginning, and starting with the first wide release book I ever wrote, Rules for Patriots, How Conservatives Can Win Again, we have tried on our show, with the focus on a biblical worldview, and therefore the tactics that we will advocate, will, we hope anyway, align with that, to elevate that, is we're trying to say, we're going to have to learn here how to do both of these things at the same time. So do we just let them run over the Shire while we're pontificating a 50-year plan? Or do we just continue to throw as many bodies at the black gate as we can to hold it back and not plan for what the future looks like? That the answer is no. You have to do both at the same time. All right. And that's where worldview comes in. Because it is what we think about and the way we think about it all day that we will eventually become. Your worldview is the foundation of your belief system. This, what I'm about to explain, is true of every sane, legal, mentally competent human being that's ever lived. billions, trillions ever lived. This is true of all of them. Your worldview is the foundation of your beliefs. Your beliefs will be what dictate in any particular situation what are your behaviors, preferences, emotions, and responses. And then those behaviors, preferences, emotions, and responses will come full circle and be what testifies to the outside world that is watching you what your worldview truly is. Or as Jesus said, you know a tree by its fruit. This is how we all process. If we are legally competent. Now, if you're mentally ill, if you've had a brain damage, maybe your brain doesn't work this way. But the way we are created, this is when we are in a healthy state and we're not in an altered state of some kind, this is how the brain functions. OK, the differences in the debates come in. What do we plug into the worldview? Empty, you know, box, what do we plug into, and then what gets plugged into the belief box, and then how we choose to act based on those beliefs. That's where the differences between customs, cultures, and individuals comes in. But that overall framework, your worldview dictates your beliefs. Your beliefs will be what inspires your behaviors, your preferences, your emotions, your responses to a given situation. And then those emotions, responses, preferences, and behaviors will then be the testimony of what ultimately is your worldview. That's incontrovertible. Not debatable. Metaphysical fact of the universe. Which is why I want to show you this tweet. This is from Lucas Gage. Now, who do you know? Who is Lucas Gage? Until this morning, I did not know. According to his Twitter bio, he's a Marine. So we want to show him respect. As everybody of mine that's ever served in the Marine Corps has told me, there's no such thing as a retired Marine. Okay, so he's just not actively serving, but he's a Marine. So we show him respect. All right. He claims to be America first, MAGA, free speech absolutist. This is all in his bio. And he's got roughly about the same amount of Twitter followers that I have. So this is not, you know, the way I work. If this was just, you know, a random person or some Twitter egg with 50, we wouldn't be discussing this. Okay. But this gentleman has a large audience on Twitter, and he tweeted this morning, or last night, I should say, Islam and Christianity are pro-Christ. Judaism is literally antichrist. Who benefits from pitting these religions against each other? It's not that hard to see, gents. So stop spurging and start hitting Jewish power even harder. Diversity is a Jewish weapon after all. Now, what is wrong with this statement? I'm going to discuss that here in just a second. But first, talking about undoing bad ideas and stinking thinking. That's why we partnered with our friends over at Hillsdale College. All right. They are also concerned about, as Lucas says, diversity. They're concerned about it, too. For example, the American Medical Association is saying that medicine is imbued with white supremacy. And so now we've got to lower our standards for who can and cannot get into a medical school. I'm sure when they're doing meatball surgery on you, I'm sure you want the ones with the lower standards. You'd pick those first, right? Hey, give me the doctors who went to the schools with the lower standards. Everybody screams that in the ER at the same time, do they? You put that request on your chart?
Liberals probably are now, by the way.
You never know. Anyway, that's why you want to read Imprimis. It is Hillsdale College's free digest of liberty that goes to more than 6.5 million homes and businesses. Imprimis gives you smart constitutional commentary from conservatives and thought leaders like Christopher Rufo, Victor Davis Hanson, and so many more. If you want to get it for free, there's absolutely no cost or obligation. You can sign up today at daceforhillsdale.com. And frankly, I think that Mr. Gage needs to read this. Daceforhillsdale.com, F-O-R, daceforhillsdale.com. So I know you hate The Last Jedi, and I understand why you do. And we're not going to reopen those wounds from 5 years ago. I do think it's the best made of the Star Wars sequels. That may be a low bar, looking at the body of work. But there are some memorable lines in The Last Jedi.
Oh, that's true, for sure.
And you know, the confrontation that Luke's Force ghost has with Kylo Ren. And Kylo just goes on this rant. Looks a little bit like this tweet, honestly. Okay? Just goes on this rant, asserting like all of this polemic rant, you know, asserting all of these buzzwords and catchphrases about the cultural clash that is being unveiled in this plot line, right? Okay.
Yes.
And Luke, his elder, is just sitting there listening to all of this via his projected Force ghost, and then just looks at him and says, "Everything you just said is exactly wrong." meaning that you have, because you missed the premise of what is happening here, and you're under the auspices that you've discovered some new truth. You've cracked some code that hadn't previously been considered. And you have found the hidden knowledge that all the regular people weren't given access to, but you're special enough, sir, that you either were granted it or uncovered it. Therefore, you have this whole new narrative to preach and unveil that we've all just been, you're the people we've been waiting for. That's basically the premise of Kylo Ren in the films, right?
Sure.
Okay. You and I are in our 50s.
Yes.
Can you put Lucas's tweet back up there, Victoria, for just a second? Is this the first time that you've ever heard these arguments?
No.
No. The first time you've ever heard any of these kind of buzzwords or catchphrases or anything ever?
It is
not. No. So if we're in our 50s and we've probably heard this all before, then what about in the 1800s? Think they heard this in some variation all before?
Well,
yeah. What about the 1400s?
And on.
1100s, do you think? Okay. How about 70 AD as the Christians are fleeing to Petra while Titus sacks Jerusalem? Do you think they probably, heard some of this before? There's nothing new under the sun.
I was just going to say.
This isn't original, right?
Right.
Okay. So then if this isn't original, we have to wrestle with why are Christianity and Islam at odds? And why is that the case, right?
We should.
You should. Okay. So he thinks via this tweet that he is wrestling with why Christianity and Islam are at odds. He's not. Because his goal here is to, if you look at what he's going after, his goal here is not to seek truth. It's to confirm a narrative that he has against Jews. Now, do we agree with non-Messianic Jews on everything?
Absolutely not. Otherwise, we'd be...
Yeah, we'd go to church on a different day. Yes. We'd have completely different religious customs. And this a few weeks ago, we would have had a Seder meal instead of, ham at Easter, right? Okay. So if Christianity and Judaism always been simpatico and done great with one another, and it's been USA for Africa, ebony and ivory living together in perfect harmony, is that the 2,000-year history of this relationship? No, it's not. Okay. But... The reasons for those things have absolutely nothing to do with anything he posted here. In fact, I'm going to prove to you that everything he says here, and this is growing, the reason I'm singling this out is because this voice, maybe you don't see it if you're not on righty social media, but this narrative is growing in volumes.
Sadly, yes.
And it leads to some of the, and frankly, people like Candace Owen and Tucker Carlson are either responding to it or playing to it, one or the other. All right. And I think it needs to be confronted and corrected. So I'm going to.
I don't even want to ask you if he has Christ as King in his bio.
Exactly. So let's do this for just a second, okay? First of all, when you look at Islam and Christianity, Islam teaches that Christ was not crucified. It's right there in the Quran. Jesus was not crucified. Allah removed Christ to fool the Jews and put somebody else up on the cross. That's right in the Quran. So the problem is, if Christ wasn't crucified, Todd, that means therefore he also wasn't what?
Resurrected.
And if he wasn't resurrected, then guess what we don't have?
A Christ?
Yes.
Yeah, just a guy named Jesus?
Yeah, we just have a carpenter from Nazareth named Yeshua, okay? Who's a curious fellow, all right? But he's not God, okay? So
Lord, liar, or lunatic,
correct.
I believe a great author once
said. So Islam says that Christ wasn't crucified, therefore he couldn't be resurrected. Christianity says without a crucified Christ who was resurrected, there cannot be a Christianity. So right from the outset, Christianity and Islam are at odds. They can both be false, right?
Yes.
The Jews could be right, and Christians and Muslims could both be wrong, right? But Christians and Muslims cannot both be right.
They're not only at odds, they're at odds about the whole crux
yes,
of the
from
matter.
Yes, from the very first step of this debate, correct. Let's continue on. Islam says that the Quran was revealed to Muhammad, who was illiterate by his own admission, by the way, that it was revealed to Muhammad in a cave by the angel Gabriel, okay? And that the line and that the line of blessing from the one true God, which Islam calls Allah, okay, came through Abraham's seed of Ishmael. Christianity teaches that the angel Gabriel is actually who announced to a Jew named Mary that she would become the woman that would give birth to the Jewish Messiah from the long line of Isaac, the other son. So again, fundamental disagreement here, that something that these things just cannot possibly be reconciled on any level whatsoever. Correct?
Correct.
Okay. Number three, Islam teaches that God has no son. Now, you know, that Dome of the Rock, that if it weren't for the Iron Dome that the Jews have there in Israel, the Iranians would have blown that up over the weekend. Okay. That Dome of the Rock was covered over the Temple Mount when the Muslims took it over during the Crusades. If you were permitted, and you probably wouldn't be, but if you were permitted as a Jew or a Christian inside of that structure, you would see carved up on the interior of the roof of that dome in Arabic, the words, God has no son. Okay. Christianity says a Jewish carpenter from a Jewish mother was the son of God. Is there a conflict there, Todd? Subtle though it may be, is there a conflict there, Todd?
Again,
that is largely and wholly irreconcilable and couldn't possibly be papered or over or watered down.
A conflict in a purposeful one when they themselves are etching it in stone. Yes.
Correct. Islam violently wiped out. Now, to demonstrate and confirm and prove these fundamental differences are not reconcilable, we're back to that worldview thing again. Okay, so the worldview dictates the beliefs, and the beliefs dictate your behaviors and responses and emotions,
yes.
Right? Okay, so the Islamic worldview, believing that Ishmael is the son of promise and not Isaac, okay, and that God has no son, created a set of beliefs about their religion, and then those beliefs propelled and inspired behaviors based upon those beliefs, right? Let's look at some of those behaviors. Islam violently wiped out the earliest Christian settlements in Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, and Turkey, or Asia Minor. For example, the early Christians, who were all Jewish, would often flee into these other outlying areas outside of Jerusalem to escape persecution or shunning from their own Jewish family members, okay, or the Sanhedrin, or people like Saul before he became Paul. That's what they're doing in places like Antioch, which is why they're called, that was the first place they were called Christians. Why is Syria no longer a Christian nation? Why is Lebanon no longer one? Why is Iraq no longer one? Why is Asia Minor, the seven churches there that Jesus, the final word of scripture, according to Christians, the book of Revelation, and it's written via seven churches of Asia Minor, which is modern day Turkey. Where did those churches go? Was there a referendum and they just voted? You know, populism. They just voted, well, we're going to be Muslims now. No, the Muslims came with their curved swords and violently wiped out almost all of those enclaves, or drove them into caves, or to Cappadocia, Egypt is one of the earliest enclaves of Christianity. There's literally like 50 Cappadocia, Egyptian, or I'm sorry, it's not Cappadocia, it's in Asia Minor. But there's literally like 50 Egyptian Christians in the world. I'm slightly exaggerating, but not much. Okay. Why? Islam wiped them out. Okay, why? Under the belief that Christianity was wrong, that God has no son, that Isaac is not the son of promise. The Jews were not the line of the Messiah. How did they continue to act? Well, at the founding of this country, the very first war we ever fought were against the Barbary Coast pirates. They were hijacking our ships, going after our sailors, killing them. You know, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. What is that a reference to? To this, okay? And when they were confronted during the negotiations for peace, Thomas Jefferson asked them, "We don't have a clue who you people are, basically. Why the hell are you doing this to us?" And they literally told him to his face, "Muhammad told us to do this to kufr like you, or infidels. Muhammad told us to do it. That's why. We get to plunder you. You're kufr." That sound familiar to you? Because that's the 18th century. That sound familiar to you? How about in this century? Kinda?
Yeah.
In this century, we've had one successful domestic attack on U.S. soil in this century so far. Who did it? The Jews?
No.
No, the Islamists. They did it. Okay. Literally, this gentleman who served this country, and we thank him for that, but he's got almost a quarter of a million people following him. And hey, the instincts of wanting to, and the reactions of wanting to do something about what's happening to the West, we applaud him for having those instincts and wanting to do something, including, by the way, wearing a uniform and being the elite of the elite to go and fight on our behalf. Yes. We applaud that, right? The problem is the worldview that he is starting with will make everything he's reacting to worse. Worse. The Islamist will take your view. Your view's not smart. It's not nuanced. It's gullible. It's naive. The Islamist will take your viewpoint. They'll nod and say, enjoy your Andrew Tates and everything else. We'll go ahead while we're done exterminating the Jews. And then after that, we're coming after you next. And you can tell us again how we're all the same faith and we agree with one another while we're slitting you and your throats next. We're gutting you next. This isn't smart. It's not nuanced. It's just wrong. It's exactly wrong. And it is growing in volume on the American right. And if we and it's not even about the relationship with Israel or Jews in particular. That's a symptom again. The broader rejection of the foundations of Western civilization in order to save Western civilization. I have a guy whose avatar on Twitter is Charlemagne telling me Islam is great. History much? You're all wrong. Had our monthly card game with our buddies last night. And, man, typically we all get together as guys to get away from everything going on in the culture. We really don't talk a lot of politics and stuff, you know, at the card table. But given what's going on economically right now, we just, everybody's views on gold and Bitcoin and crypto and, you know, all those other things just came up because everybody is concerned. And looking at long-term indicators of where things are going. New housing starts right now in March at their lowest level since March of 2020. That's shutdowns, COVID. Those aren't good signs. All right. So there's a very common sense reason that gold is pushing towards all-time highs right now. And it's a lot of the stuff that I just said. Okay. So if you want to get more info on why so many Americans are turning to gold, turn to Birch Gold Group. They can help you diversify your savings, secure a portion of them with gold from Birch Gold. You'll learn how to convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold. And it won't cost you a penny out of pocket. Just get started by texting Steve to 989-898 to get your free info kit on gold. Text Steve to 989-898 to get started with a free info kit on gold from Birch Gold. Rated A+ from the Better Business Bureau. Tens of thousands of happy customers. You can count on them to help you in these uncertain times. Text Steve to 989-898. Text Steve to 989-898. Well, pre-sales are underway now for a new book coming here in almost exactly a month from now, called Swimming Against the Current, Fighting for Common Sense in a World That's Lost Its Mind. National championship swimmer Riley Gaines, also with OutKick, joins us here on The Blaze. It's good to have you, Riley, back on the program. How you been?
Well, I have been great. It is so good to be on with you guys, so thank you for having me.
There's a lot going on in the arena that you are fighting and battling in right now. Let's start where there's some crossover to our show, because you're a part of the same lawsuit that my assistant Todd, his daughter Ainsley, who is a decorated athlete. Now she's on a double scholarship at the University of Arkansas. A group of female athletes now suing the NCAA, saying, hey, you're violating Title IX by not defending women's sports and allowing biological men to compete in them. Tell us why you decided to help spearhead this effort. And ultimately, what is it you want the NCAA to now do in response?
Well, let me just say, I could not be more proud of the other athletes, of course, myself and 15 other athletes who have signed on to this lawsuit. Todd Erzin's daughter, Ainsley, being included, she's someone who I look up to. She's incredible. A two-sport athlete in college, that's unheard of. So she's just amazing and certainly a role model for me. But look, what we're suing over is the NCAA explicitly and directly violating the federal civil rights law that is Title IX. Of course, Title IX is the law enacted back in 1972, so 52 years since its implementation, that prevents discrimination on the basis of sex, much broader than just women's sports, but most notably known for giving the opportunities for women to compete at the same level as men, especially at the collegiate level. But what the NCAA has done and continues to do is do just that. I mean, they're discriminating against us on the basis of our sex. They're failing at their most basic duties of ensuring equal opportunity, ensuring safety in our sports, and ensuring privacy in areas of undressing. And so I'll tell you, for so long, I thought to myself, you know, it seemed pretty black and white to me. Someone should sue. It's what the other side does so well. And I just kept thinking, well, who's going to? And finally, it was like God tapping me on my shoulder. And he's like, hey, Riley, it's you. Of course, along with these other athletes. And so ultimately what we're looking for here, to answer your question of what we want the NCAA to do, is one, accountability, two, responsibility, and three, to uphold Title IX's original intent. Very basic. It's not, you know, it seems as if we're really demanding the bare minimum here.
The bare minimum is a tough hill to climb in the current culture on multiple fronts, but you were boosted recently, the NAIA, for people that don't know kind of the nuances and inner workings of collegiate sports, that would be more, you know, your smaller, lower level. And in terms of lower level, we just mean in terms of attendance and the size of the school and the budget of the athletic department. So lower level of competition, but yet they are a sanctioned collegiate association. They have national championships. They get televised as well. They came out recently and said, hey, we're not going to participate in this insanity. Have you guys' attorneys indicated whether that is a boost to your claims or your case or not, Riley?
It is certainly something that helps the lawsuit. Look, what we've known throughout history is that courage begets courage. And so the NAIA voting overwhelmingly in support in a 25-0 vote to prevent men from competing in women's sports and vice versa, this is huge. It's sad that it takes kind of like the little guy here, the little guy to do the right thing for the bigger guys to hopefully find the courage and the backbone and the morals that for so long they have lacked, that ultimately put us in the position that we're at. But I believe it sets the precedent. So it's great for the lawsuits, great for the courts to have something to resort to. And I'm hopeful. I've been naive before. I want to say I'm confident that the NCAA will do the right thing, but I don't know if I'm confident yet, but I'm hopeful that they do. I know they want to. That's the bottom line here. I know the NCAA, I think they're excited about our lawsuit, to be totally honest with you. They want to be able to say their hands are tied. You know, there's nothing we can do. That's what they've done thus far. That's what they want to continue doing. I think they're thrilled that states are taking this up. Now 24 states have enacted some sort of fairness in women's sports law. I think the NCAA loves that. It takes the responsibility away from them. So I think the same is true with the NAIA and passing, you know, this new ruling that prevents men from competing in women's sports. I think the NCAA hopefully will follow suit.
Riley, you read my mind, because you literally just said what was going to be the premise of my next question. As a guy that came out of the sports talk world and still follows sports pretty closely for fun in my private life, very well aware of what's going on with the NCAA now on multiple fronts when it comes to NIL and paying players and everything else. And there's now a politician, literal politician, in charge of the NCAA, former Massachusetts Republican Governor Charlie Baker. And even though he's a Massachusetts Republican, which frankly, it means he's not very Republican. For what typically is in charge of the NCAA, he's Attila the Hun. Okay, and it does strike me at their silence here did strike me as a huge political. This is a classic Rhino Republican play. I don't have the testicular fortitude to do what must be done. So let me just sit back and hopefully there'll be some organic outrage that will correct this situation. So like Pontius Pilate, I can wash my hands of it and say it wasn't me. I didn't render this ruling. It's just what the courts or somebody have spoken. I have watched longer than you've been alive, girl. I have watched Republicans do this, okay? And this seems like a classic Republican party play where secretly he'll never say this to, you know, the national college writer at ESPN who thinks that, you know, that anything can be a girl and compete. But privately, I do bet you he's ecstatic you all did this, hoping that the system will force his hand so he gets to claim, I'm not the bigot here. I just was doing what the courts demanded after all.
Of course he is. And to your point, and being inundated with requests and emails and different things, understand it is our job as everyday people, as parents of female athletes ourselves, as medical professionals, as fathers, I mean, the list goes on. It's our job to hold our leaders accountable. We would be, I mean, if we waited for people to do the right thing, especially our leaders unprovoked, we would be waiting for forever. It's up to us to hold their feet to the fire. And again, like I said previously, it's what the other side does so well. Mm-hmm. They threaten lawsuits. They pursue these lawsuits. So it's time that we do the same thing. Not, in, I mean, yes, in terms of litigation, certainly that's an area to fight back, but just letting your voice be heard. The NCAA, I will say that I believe in the next few weeks, less than the next 2 weeks, they will be voting on their rules, just like the NAIA just did. Inundate them, the Board of Governors, with emails. There's even templates out there. You can go to IWNnetwork.org, and there's templates. There's a way to send out blast an email to all the Board of Governors. They make it super easy for you. Again, that is necessary that we do that. Charlie Baker, he even sat in front of the Senate. Josh Hawley, Senator Hawley, began asking him questions. The hearing was actually on NIL, but he started pressing him on this issue. He asked him 7 questions in a row that Charlie Baker said, well, I don't have an answer for you. Okay, well, what about the locker room, President Baker? You know, what does that policy look like as it stands today? Well, let me get back to you in writing, Senator Hawley. 7 questions in a row. That to tell you, that to really show you, highlight how our leaders, whether that's in the NCAA, whether that's corporate America, whether that's the media, our government, people, I mean, the people in the White House right now, the very tippy top, they are weak-kneed, they are spineless, they are morally bankrupt cowards.
Amen. All right, last thing I want to ask you about, if you don't mind, I want to get kind of personal with you for a second. As someone that I'm guessing 3-4 years ago, this was not your life plan, right? I mean, you're successful, you're a champion, you're going to go to dental school, you know, probably become some form of spokeswoman, commentator on a sport that you've been excellent at. Just, you had a completely different life plan. And then this intervenes, and conviction, as you talked about earlier, intervenes as well. And now you're on this path. And on a daily basis, when you see stuff like, one day the Supreme Court says, with the Idaho ruling, yeah, you can enforce that. What's happening here, what they're doing here is immoral. Don't continue to permit it. And then you know, the very next day, another court in the West Virginia district comes out and says, actually, you know, we're going to make sure that's exactly what the Supreme Court means. So your head's on a swivel going back and forth. We're in national championship season right now for spring sports. And we're going to see, and we're already seeing again, another wave of Leah Thomas wannabes. You know, and what they're doing to female athletes, and really just femininity as a general principle. This is just the vehicle for it. Just, you know, what keeps you going? What's kind of your plumb line, and how do you avoid getting discouraged?
A couple things, specifically to answer how I avoid getting discouraged, because look, the battle has already been won. That's the most beautiful. The most beautiful piece about not just this issue, but I mean, all of the cultural issues that we're seeing, all of this world as we know it, we know what the outcome is because the Bible tells us what the outcome is. So of course, having security in the fact that I'm standing for objective truth, the most basic of objective truths at that, man and woman, that makes it easy, biological reality. But what makes it even easier than that is I'm standing for biblical truth. That is before anything. I want to live a Christ-like life, and standing for how God created us perfect and intentionally in his image, I'm doing just that. So that is certainly what keeps me from being discouraged is the security there, but not to mention, I have a little sister. She's 15 years old. She's an elite level gymnast. She's incredible. She will go on to do amazing things. Compete hopefully at the University of Kentucky, certainly staying in the SEC. You guys up there where you are, you don't know competition till you come down to the SEC. So hopefully my little sister, I'm certain will do that. You know, being married for nearly 2 years, coming up on my 2-year anniversary, I can only hope to have a daughter of my own one day. And I don't know how I, as a future mother, as a older sister to a younger one, I don't know how I could look myself in the mirror and be proud of myself having experienced what we did, mm-hmm. facing what we faced, and not standing up for them. That's what all this is about. It's not about me. I'm not vying to be some sort of politician. Are you crazy? Who in their right minds would do that? I'm certainly not vying to climb the ladder there or to have this gig on Fox News or whatever it is. That's not what I'm fighting for. What I'm fighting for is my younger sister's future. That's what this is about.
That's an awesome answer. All right, I want to make sure we get some action points from you before we let you go. You gave out a website a minute ago where people can go and take part in applying, let's call it encouragement, aggressive encouragement upon the NCAA Board of Governors. What was that website again? Give that one out if you don't mind.
Yes, you can check it out at IWF.org. That stands for Independent Women's Forum. I believe it's also on IWN Network, which is Independent Women's Network. They've got a very easy way to be able to send out, you can customize it how you wish, personalize it how you wish, but an easy way to send out an email to the NCAA Board of Governors, which is, again, necessary, crucial, and urgent that we do that.
All right, so everybody right now, go to IWF for Independent Women's Forum, F as in Frank, IWF right now. Fill out that form, take 5 minutes out of your day, fill that thing out, and that's one action point item you can do to apply some pressure here. You've got a new book coming out, Swimming Against the Current, Fighting for Common Sense in a World That's Lost Its Mind. People can pre-order the book right now on Amazon, and it's coming out May 21st. Anything else real quick you want to say about that?
You got it. Super fun to be involved in that process. Of course, it's a much deeper dive into what myself and, again, girls around the country, really around the world, continue to face in terms of the unfair competition, being non-consensually exploited in locker rooms, the silencing that we face even. So again, that's called Swimming Against the Current. It's available for pre-order. You can look it up on Amazon, wherever you get your books. Super fun process.
And then last thing, before we let you go, real quick, make sure people know you've got your own show there on OutKick. How can they tune in and find you?
Yes, I've got a podcast with OutKick. It is called Gains for Girls. Also fun to be on the other side of these interviews, you know, talking to policy experts and world-leading scientists and, of course, people who have been adversely impacted at the hands of this movement. So lots of fun things going on over there. That's called Gains for Girls. You can check it out anywhere where you get your podcast.
Excellent stuff. Finish the race, Riley. You are running it. Finish the race. You're setting the example. Thank you so much.
I'm swimming it. Thank you so much.
All right. Yes, you're swimming it. You're right. Thank you. My bad. All right. That's Riley Gaines. Todd, your thoughts on that conversation?
Like I've said on the show before, and I've told her, she's a modern-day Joan of Arc. And she could be the things. That's the great thing about this, why she is that. She could be the next politician. She could be governor probably quickly. She could be on Fox News as a star, but she'd have to sell out. And she's not going to. It's so refreshing. And tomorrow, Wednesday, she's actually going to be here in Iowa, up in Ames, spreading the message here in Iowa as she's spending the time to do nationwide because she believes in little sisters out there and little girls and future daughters. It's inspiring to behold, and I'm so honored that my daughter is part of this cause with her.
You know, it's not any kind of fight, any form of healthy society or civilization should have.
Exactly.
Right? But we have to also say that it is bringing out the best in some people. Yeah, we are watching Romans 8:28, our closing verse, play out.
Amen.
In this battle, especially with people like Riley. We'll come back. Hour two is next. All right, back here with hour two here on Live Demand and Demand. At least we hope we're live and on demand. Even hope more so we're alive and in demand here on Blaze TV, radio, and podcast. Steve Dace here with Todd Erzin. Aaron McIntyre returns here in about 2 weeks on his paternity leave. You can let us know what you think about what we think in the meantime by emailing the show, steve@stevedace.com, DEACE. Like us on Facebook, MeWe, and Gab. Follow me at Steve Dace Show on Twitter, Get our Instagram and TikTok. And then also, if you listen to the podcast version of the show, make sure you do these two things for us, if you wouldn't mind. Hit subscribe, or if you're on iTunes, follow. And if you do that, that'll mean every time we do a brand new episode, it will show up in your feed automatically every single time. And then secondly, if you like the show, give us a 5-star review, especially on iTunes. Those help the show to grow as well. And we thank each and every one of you who has done one, if not both, of those things for us already. Also want to thank our friends over at My Patriot Supply. They are the nation's leading preparedness company. And they just think, given what's gone on here the last few years, you know, Todd, you and I were talking the other day about how many more times are we going to have, well, imagine if that were to happen, or that could never happen here, or if this becomes anything like blank, how many of those Rubicons have we crossed in the last few years? How many of those, seals have we broken in the last few years?
Too many, and clearly not all of them.
Indeed. So just make sure you're ready. Go to preparewithdace.com and start with the 4-week emergency food kits from My Patriot Supply. They are helping millions of Americans prepare since 2008, which, you know, we had, that was the last major economic downturn we had. I think next year we're looking at something at least at that level. So My Patriot Supply. They are the experts in self-reliance. Their 4-week emergency food kits offer over 2,000 calories per day, every day. And they're protected with heavy-duty four-layer packaging that helps the kits to last up to 25 years with proper storage. All right, so go to preparewithdace.com. Save $50 per kit. $50 per kit you'll save when you get it at preparewithdace.com. They also ship these out fast and free in unmarked boxes, too, if you don't want Uncle Sam to know what you're doing. All right. Preparewithdace.com. Again, head over to preparewithdace.com. All right. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to speak to a fan of the show who's also in the Minnesota State Legislature right now. And what are some of the lessons he's learned and things he has witnessed being on the ground, on the front lines of the battle? But I want to go back to what we opened the show with, because I think it'll be a good segue to our Pop Culture Tuesday topic and the importance of worldview. I mean, you heard from Riley Gaines last segment. What drives her? How does she stay encouraged despite, you know, essentially the culture that she lives in is trying to erase her? So, I mean, how do you stay encouraged? How do you stay in the fight? To use a real Christian-y term, how do you not lose your joy? Okay, how does that happen? And you heard her articulate her worldview. You heard her articulate a worldview, and then you saw what she believes as a result of that worldview. Hey, my worldview says that the victory is ultimately already won. So my encouragement and everything comes from a belief in that. Doesn't mean I won't fight hard. Doesn't mean I won't fight tough. But I'm not embracing nihilism. I'm not getting black-pilled. She says, hey, I've already won. You know? So that's a belief, right?
Yes.
And then those beliefs have inspired the level of conviction and behaviors, ultimately. Perfect demonstration of what we were talking about in the very first segment. And that we can have the right reactions. We can, meaning that that's bad and that's good, all right? But if those reactions don't start with the right premise. So go back to the tweet we talked about at the top of the show. Would it be smart right now? Well, in any era, but especially right now, given the people in charge of the West, to be unnecessarily stoking war between the Jewish state and the Islamic world, by and large? Would that probably be a wise move to be stoking it? I mean, things can happen organically you cannot control, right? But given who the current leadership of the Western world is, starting with our own nation, you feeling necessarily comfortable if that conflict goes hot?
I'm not comfortable with that regarding any topic in our current leadership.
Correct.
Certainly not.
In
this
fact,
one.
we just discussed that yesterday.
Yeah.
That even though we agree with many of the premises, that we think the facts and the history, remove the theological view, we think the facts and the historical narrative line up with the majority of the pro-Zionist or pro-Israeli, pro-Jewish, whoever you want to define it, narrative, okay, that does not necessarily mean that we are anxious to see the Israelis uber-aggressively act on that premise, given the state of things in the wider world around us and who's in charge in certain places, starting with our own country
right now.
All right, so we might have come to a similar conclusion on some of what we would expect or hope that would happen would be the outcome between Israel and Iran in this moment as Lucas Gage from the first segment. But we're starting from an entirely different premise, okay? And if our premises remain flawed, you know what? Let me put it this way. Nick Saban, all right, since Riley invoked the greatness of the Southeastern Conference, let's continue that for a second. You know, Nick Saban, when he was coaching Alabama, was famous for what he called the process. Okay. And that ultimately, if you come in, whether you're I don't care how much of a five star you are, you will not reach your potential if you do not follow this process, that this process is meant to get the outcome that you want. And if you cut corners and skip right to, let me immediately try to get to the outcome I want, the premise and found will be flawed. The foundation will not be laid. You won't reach your potential. And this is how he got a bunch of guys who could have gone anywhere. Well, they got paid at Alabama, probably, but probably could have gotten paid at a lot of other places, too, if you're that good. You know what I'm saying? I mean, is Alabama the only people that were probably offering players money? Probably not. Okay,
no,
so probably the only aggressive boosters out there saying here's a $5,000 handshake, probably not. Okay, so why then? Why were guys willing to sit there for 2 or 3 years waiting to play? You don't see that anywhere, and you're going to see it nowhere now with the transfer portal. If I'm starting or I'm departing is basically what's going to happen across the board now, right? Okay, so how did he do this at Alabama? Because the proof was in the process. Yeah. He was cranky, cantankerous. He'd tell you things you didn't want to hear. Very old school. But over time, all the national championships, all the first-round draft picks, all the award winners proved out that the process was right if you followed it. Okay? That's kind of what we mean from a worldview. That's a good illustration of why worldview is so important here. Because right now, if we all agree, this is probably not that there's ever a great time to risk World War III. But given who's in charge in many of the places right now in the West, I frankly think they're enemies of Western tradition and Western civilization. I think they're frankly more of a threat to me than even radical Islam is at the moment. Okay, I mean, after all, when Trump left office, Iran was isolated and emasculated as a country. Who re-empowered them? Our own leadership here in this country did. Okay, yeah. One of the reasons Iran's got 300 missiles to waste lobbing at Israel on a Shabbat night, okay, is because of our own presidency. That's an example of what we mean here when we're like, this may not, even though we agree with your premise and think that you were on the right side of history here, the moment has us going, yikes, just even contemplating what happens if there's full-scale war between Israel and Iran. Fair?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Biden makes Neville Chamberlain look like the last son of Krypton.
But if we consistently try to come up with the right decisions without considering the foundation or premise of those decisions, eventually your worldview gets warped. And that's what I think happened to Mr. Gage in the tweet that we mentioned. As a Marine, he's probably tired of forever war. We're tired of forever war, right?
Sure.
Tired of being lied to. We're tired of being lied to, right? Okay.
Yes.
But you have to start with the right premise. Otherwise, if all you're doing is reactionary, back to our original word picture. All right, so go back to the original word picture. You've got the gunshot wound and you're bleeding out, okay? We've got to do triage right away, right? Got to stop the bleeding. That's our first concern, stop the bleeding. Okay, we did. Bleeding has been stopped. But if we stop there and never remove the bullet, will the body heal itself?
Almost certainly no.
No. That's a lot of what we are doing here on the right. We're doing the triage. But we're never taking the bullet out. We're never addressing what caused the actual problem.
And we have no plans to either, clearly.
And that's how, if reactionary in and of itself is not sinful or bad, right? When Christ enters the temple and he sees the money changers, he's reacting to them. That was a reactionary moment, right? Okay. So, I mean, someone wants to harm your daughter or wife and you as a man react to that. That's righteous. Okay, reactionaryism, we often use it as a bad word. I can't believe there's still somebody in this audience who emailed me yesterday and thought calling me a Puritan would be a put down. How many times do I have to say the Puritans founded the country? Guys, thank you for the compliment. I appreciate it. Okay. And given the amount of kids they all had more sex than you, I promise. All right. So they weren't prudes and they founded the country. You don't know what you're talking about. All right. Similarly, just because they didn't believe we should walk around and have drag queen story time hour. Okay. And you should have your butt, your half your butt crack exposed with your saggy jeans. All right. And clip all down to, you know, areola exposed in your halter top. Doesn't mean they were prudes, guys. All right. They were constantly pregnant and pushing out kids, and none of them were immaculate, okay? So, and they founded the country. So that's not a put down. You're just putting yourself out there as being dumb, right? Similarly, reactionaryism is not in and of itself bad. But if it's all we ever do, if we never move beyond that, then we're never going to heal the body. And that's why we have to address the disease, the worldview. And we'll end up reacting in ways, and then our worldview will get rotten because you'll get sick of reacting to these things over and over again. I'm sick of reacting to forever war, so let me find out who's responsible for it. The Jews. You see what I mean? I mean, that's not a original take, dude. Okay? Similarly, in my own walk, as we get into Pop Culture Tuesday now, the making of Nefarious and that experience absolutely challenged my worldview. It absolutely did. Because I experienced things that I can't deny. I saw things that I can't deny. And even though I've never subscribed to a theological tradition within Christendom that rejects that these kinds of things are paramount or are still occurring, it's also not really been the hallmark of how I've used my faith to engage what we do here on the show. I mean, this has always been a very intellectual pursuit, worldview heavy, you know, that kind of a show. I never thought I was going to, you know, use terms like demonic in my everyday analysis when I got into this for a living. And it wasn't just watching what's happening in the broader culture, but watching things occur just within the process of making this movie that hit home to me. And it's challenged my worldview. And if the thing when you get your worldview be challenged is that's not always going to be a seamless process, is it?
It can't be.
It can't be. It's a refinement, which means you're going to make missteps. And at the time, you may not even know they're missteps. You'll find out later on they're missteps, and you're like, got to go back and correct that, right? Or at times you'll wish you did something differently than you did before. This is just all part of another level of what we call, you know, a fancy stained glass window word of sanctification, the process of which means after your conversion, making you more like Christ. That's really what that means. Okay. And the making of Nefarious and what we went through with this film now, and I've thought a lot about it here. It's been 1 year to the day. And I got it in the mail yesterday. The hospital in Rochester, New York finally sent us the bill for the ambulance. It's been almost a year. We finally got the bill in the mail for the first ambulance trip I've ever taken in my life.
Trust the experts, Steve.
Yes. Apparently, they don't like money, I guess. They finally sent us the bill. Okay. But we got the bill in the mail, and I'm looking at the bill, and I'm like, what? An EMS in New York? And then I remembered, oh, this was for me. You know, April 24th last year. So, right around this time. And, you know, I've walked by the movie poster in my man cave every day this entire time, but it's just kind of a decoration now. I'm kind of used to it, like it is over your shoulder, you know, or there it is on the screen. But getting that bill for the ambulance in the mail last week, and it was like, wait a minute, this is like the 1 year anniversary. And a lot happened with this experience and changed me in certain ways that I'm still trying to figure out, frankly, what that means. And I'm going to talk more about that here in a minute. First, let me remind you, though, about our friends over at Eden Pure. They are back with us here on the Steve Day Show with their famous Thunderstorm air purifier. It's their top-selling air purifier that quickly destroys everything from odors to viruses, so much more. It's got thousands of five-star reviews. We had so many positive reviews from so many of you in our audience. So you guys know that it works. Any smell will vanish after just a few seconds with the Thunderstorm being on. Odors from litter boxes to trash cans, even cigarette smoke, dirty diapers, and more. Absolutely no match for the powerful Thunderstorm and what it does to seek out and destroy those odors, I should say. Right. By the way, remember, no filters. So you won't have to buy filters over and over again, change them out or swap them out over and over again. All right. So start enjoying your home again and get several Thunderstorms right now. You can save $200 on an Eden Pure Thunderstorm 3-pack for whole home protection. 3 units for under $200. Put one in your basement, bedroom, family room, kitchen, garage, anywhere you want clean, fresh air. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Use the discount code Steve3 to save that $200. That's EdenPureDeals.com. Discount code Steve3. Discount code Steve3 at EdenPureDeals.com. So, for example, right around the time, right before our movie came out, there was another movie that had hit theaters called Come Out in Jesus' Name. And I'm just going to tell you, prior to my experience with Nefarious, I would not have even contemplated entertaining the film, even watching it. Not necessarily because I'm a cessationist. I've never been one. But because I thought this is really a lot of what that movie is talking about was Kooksville, frankly. And much of the teaching associated with that has been tainted, frankly, what I think by complete charlatans. People that are like, yeah, I can cast demons out of you, you know, on our ninth offering here at this sold out basketball arena. Okay. After your love gift to get in. Yeah, I mean, come on. All right. Come on, man. All right. So, but when you go through a situation where, and I'm still not entirely sure on where I'm at with all of that. Yeah, that's why the very first evergreen we did this year with these long form conversations, that's exactly why I brought Greg Locke on. I wanted to look him in the eye myself. I wanted to ask questions that I had that I thought other people might have about it. But let me just give you an example of things I witnessed. All right. And that's all I can tell you is what I witnessed. I witnessed the day that we were filming our extras for the DVD, our bonus features, which we were filming right at the hotel that we were all staying at there in Dallas. We filmed them there during the premiere. So that was maybe the last time we're all going to be together for who knows how long. So we were in one spot. We rented this was a 5-star resort. We spared no expense. One of the nicest hotels in the entire DFW is where we were for this. Okay. So again, it's not a shoddy place, bad tech. All right. 5-star place in the DFW. And I watched our equipment not work all day long as we were trying to film these DVD extras, these bonus features. And then I watched Father Carlos Martins come in. And I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, just basically spiritually cleanse the place in Jesus' name. And then I watched our stuff work. I can't explain that to you. I don't necessarily have a verse for that. Okay? I can't. All right? I can just tell you what I saw. I can just tell you what I saw. All right? I mean, I you guys know my story. I nearly died twice. I'm coming out of the hospital, and I get a text from one of our producers. His car was just totaled, I think, in the Costco parking lot. Nearly took out him and his son. The next day, one of our other producers, his car got totaled right in front of his house. What are the odds of that? Remember, we had to run a very lean and mean operation because of the strikes they put us under and everything else. We weren't even sure how long we were joking at the time last year as the movie was getting ready to come out. I had no idea if we were even going to have end credits in the film. how many crew members were willing to even put their name on the movie, and then how many crew members we actually had. I was like, it was like when you walked onto the set of Nefarious Man, it was like walking into Cheers. Everybody knew your name. Okay, everybody knows everybody. Norm, Cliff. I mean, it was the same 20 people every day thereabouts filming a movie, which requires hundreds of people thereabouts. So, I mean, what are the odds that in a producer team of six people, two of them are going to have their cars totaled in the exact same weekend? What are the odds of that? I mean, I can't explain that. But it happened. I saw it happen. I mean, I had my own encounter with the Lord that I talked about in a special podcast this time a year ago. It happened. Altered, changed my life. Something I'll never forget. It's been a year. Even today, every show, every time I speak publicly, that is part of my pre-speaking routine. Lord, let me be an apostle and not an assassin. So I don't have all the answers to these things yet. It's not an area of theological expertise I think as a layman I have much of, honestly, because I'd kind of written a lot of this off as, like I said a few minutes ago, kooksville and or corrupt. This is just used to take advantage of a lot of desperate people, sadly, by complete charlatans like the Benny Hinn's of the world. But I also can't deny, what are the odds? What are the odds that the one producer, this isn't Dan Bongino, Ben Shapiro, or Glenn Beck, guys. We're not doing two million downloads an episode of the show. We got a nice sized audience, otherwise we wouldn't be here on one of the biggest platforms in the alternative media. But my point is, we're not a show that's casting such a wide net that, like, we would bring in all kinds of people from various walks of life, like the top, I just mentioned like three of the top four or five shows in our entire industry, right? We're not anywhere close to that. So what are the odds that one day I'm sitting here doing the show and I don't even know that this has happened yet. I've not even been informed yet that this has occurred. That the first attempt to edit the film has become a disaster. I'm not even aware of this. And a guy named Brian just emails me. He just so happens to be the one editor at Netflix who has not taken the jab. The only one. And he just happens to be a listener to this show, which, again, this isn't Beck, Mongino, Shapiro. We're doing a few million downloads an episode, you know? And he's like, hey, man, I'm on paid leave. But here's my resume. And his resume is all this kind of suspense, thriller, horror genre of a film that we are trying to make. He's like, I'm happy to help if I can help. I send that over to our producers and one of them gets back to me. He's like, well, this is a good time to tell you what we haven't told you yet. Okay. So the initial attempt to edit this movie is a cluster. All right. So maybe we'll follow up with this guy. We couldn't afford him. It wasn't just that we found the one editor at Netflix that was on leave for not taking the jab. He happened to be on paid leave. We couldn't afford this guy. He's too good for us. So thankfully, Netflix paid him to edit our film for us. How do you possibly, if we had gotten that together, you guys know I love plans. You know I love strategies. Okay, how could I have possibly, we could have all gotten together, man, for months on end and not plotted an outcome like that, right? We couldn't have possibly come up with it. We wouldn't even know he existed. So the making of this movie, just like it changed, I've heard from so many of you about how it changed your perspective on things or the perspective of a loved one on things to confront them with the evil our culture wants to deny and therefore provoke them to then hopefully then in response more aggressively seek out the light, right? For me, what it did for me is to ponder the opposite question. I mean, as someone who helped make this film, And what I do for a living, I'm if anything, too aware of the evil that we're up against, to the point that I do fight getting blackpilled. I do fight getting discouraged. That's one of the reasons why I asked Riley Gaines that question last segment is because I wrestle with this and I'm twice her age. And I've been on the front lines of this I mean, for 15 years. 15 years ago, she was starting elementary school, okay? So I fight it. And with this film and the making of it, what it did for me was the opposite challenge. It caused me to ponder the Francis Schaeffer challenge or lament. Is my God too small? Is my God too small? That yes, I am right to pursue truth and integrity within our ranks. But I can't do so also at the expense of limiting, putting God in the same boxes that I think some people need to be put in, maybe is the best way I would put it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Some people need to be put in some boxes. Some people need to diminish so that he can increase, as John the Baptist once said. And if they won't be decreased, then we need to decrease them, frankly. Okay? Got too much clown face acts and cowardly, manginas operating in too many of our pulpits or speaking for too many of us under the banner of the cross these days. Amen?
Amen.
But let's not also at the same time put God in those boxes at the same time. Because this, I saw spiritual warfare was very real. But it wasn't, and often wasn't, discouraging or dismaying. I saw things happen. I saw doors open. I saw things just randomly occur that we could, none of us have, that were involved in the making of this movie, take any credit for. And they just, it was very clear. Another power made these things happen and opened these doors. And that has challenged my worldview without question in the last year. Todd, you have any thoughts before we close it out?
Well, I think you're going to have an opportunity here in a few weeks, if not months, to bring this up again, because what you just summed up is a conversation we're going to have about Romans. Mm-hmm. For I am not ashamed of the gospel. Well, are you? Steve's not unique there. You don't need to make a movie to have that Dark Night of the Soul conversation with yourself right now, because there are a lot of us right now, while we claim Christ is King, if it's just a silly Twitter troll and it's not bearing the kind of fruit that obviously is needed in this culture, mm-hmm. You're ashamed of the gospel. I got news for you.
Mm-hmm. So as I explore what that looks like, that may not be as locked down as some of the other theological areas that we've explored or gone into on this show, because some of this is frankly new to me. And I'm okay with iron sharpening iron. Some of you want to say, hey man, I think that was a mistake. I think you shouldn't have done that. Cool. I've gotten a lot of those emails the last few weeks. Try to engage as many as I possibly could. I can't engage them all, obviously, but I'm okay. I'm open to that process. I am.
It's
just based on what the Lord allowed me to go through in the last year plus.
He's not a tame lion, Steve.
No.
But he is good. Not tame.
Now we have some liars that need to be tamed.
Yes.
Yeah. That. I want to make sure everybody knows I'm not going to lose my zeal for that. Okay, but I want to make sure, though, that in that process, we are examining two things constantly. Number one, nobody is perfect. So there's never going to be a perfect instrument or vehicle for the word of the Lord outside of Christ. It's just not going to happen. And then number two, that we don't allow the sinful limitations of some within our midst to limit God. Hey, did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery here in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants, over 2 million happy customers right here in the United States of America. They've got everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, house plants, so much more. You know, a lot of these you can grow even inside your home. Yeah, you can grow a lemon, avocado, olive, or fig tree inside your home, a variety of houseplants you can do that with as well. So even if you don't have a yard or a great space, if you're indoors, they can help you with that too. So indoors or outdoors, they can ship it directly to you within 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. So that if you're like, all right, something's going wrong, what did I do wrong? You know, I don't have the green thumb. They've got your back all the way through the process. All right. You might be thinking, well, how in the world, if the catalog is that daunting, am I going to find what I'm looking for? I don't have a lot of time. I mean, Amy and I were able to navigate it very quickly, and we don't know anything about this kind of stuff. All right. So if we can do it, then that just goes to show you how convenient they made it for absolutely everybody. So this spring, they've got the best deals online, up to half off on selected plants and other deals. Listeners to our show get an additional 15% off your first purchase if you use the code DACE at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com. Fastgrowingtrees.com. Get an additional 15% off with the promo code DACE at checkout. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. So about a month and a half ago, I had a chance to go speak to a group of activists and legislators in the state of Minnesota, directly to the north of where we live in Iowa, because they're attempting, the spirit of the age right now is attempting to Californication Minnesota as we speak, to essentially make it the California of the Midwest. And so they were so desperate for any scintilla crumbs, basically, of wisdom that they're like, all right, we tried everybody else. Let's go ahead and bring Dace in as a last resort. All right. So had a chance to meet several cool people up there. One of them joins us now. He is a member of the Minnesota State Legislature. Walter Hudson is here with us. Don't Google his name, however. If you do, you will confuse him with the man who once had the Guinness Book of World Record for the largest waistline in American history. That is not Walter. But good to see you nevertheless, brother. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. And yeah, I've been dealing with that since childhood. So I appreciate you bringing it up right off the bat.
On the other hand, I bet that kept you on the straight and narrow from a fitness standpoint, right? Now, it's not me.
Yeah. I wish I could say I benefited more from it than I actually have.
All right. Well, what's happening right now? First of all, why did you hate your life so much that you thought, I am going to run for office? I mean, my opinions are just not well enough known. I haven't alienated enough members of the family. I haven't had, you know, enough of my friends give me the cross eye. I haven't had my kids look at me and say, Dad, can't we just have a normal life? I haven't done that enough. All right. So I'm going to run for office and just make matters all the more worse. What prompted you to do that, Walter?
Well, listening to you outline it like that, I certainly didn't evaluate it rationally. what I did was I followed what I perceived as my calling. And I think that's something that we all have to do. I mean, one of the questions, I'm sure it's one of the questions you get asked a lot too, is what can we do? And usually somebody means, what can I do? Mm-hmm. And I try to personalize it for it. It's like, look, I don't know your life. I don't know your calling. I don't know your ministry. What I do know is that you've been put where you're at, and that doors are open that lead down certain paths. And so what you need to be doing is prayerfully attuning yourself to the prompting of when you should be going left or right or moving forward or backward. And you will find your way. And that's kind of how I tripped into this situation. And I also apply that to going forward, right? So people ask me, what are your aspirations? Where are you heading next? And I don't have any aspirations. I'm dealing with what's in front of me today. And if I do a good enough job of that, then maybe I'll get another opportunity down.
Why did you choose the state legislature? Why run there?
As I say, it was an opportunity that was made available. So we had redistricting, and I live in a very red area of the state. Believe it or not, we do have some red areas of this very blue state at the moment. And at the time, current representative was moving into an open Senate district, and that just created the opportunity. And I've been involved in Republican politics for quite some time. Both at the local kind of activist level, but then also as a commentator and what have you. And so I knew how these things work. The maps were going to drop on a Tuesday. Our endorsing convention was on that Saturday. So mm-hmm. I saw a unique opportunity to kind of thread the needle and get in.
I think this is important for a lot of our audience around the country, Walter, to understand, because I think people, when they hear blue state, they immediately jump to California, New York, okay? You know, heavily urbanized states. And that's... And that's true in those cases, but except for those rare states, most of America is basically Alabama. Most of America is one or two major metropolitan centers, and then everything else is pretty rural and pretty red. And then this is why Hillary Clinton won, I think it was 16% of counties in 2016. Joe Biden actually won a little bit fewer percentage of those counties when he won in 2020. And so these maps that we like to produce after we lose an election all the time about how, well, look how red, these maps have been true. You and I are both Gen X. These maps have been true pretty much, with some deviation here and there, have been pretty true our entire lifetimes. Most of the country is, there are one or two very blue urban areas or heavily populated, densely populated college towns that are either attached to those urban areas, like in Ann Arbor is attached to Detroit, my home state of Michigan, for example, or separate from that. And that's the entirety of the Democratic vote in the entire state thereabouts. And then everything else basically looks rural and red. And that's, you know, most of America, and Minnesota is another one of those states, is basically one or two urban blue areas and everything else is Alabama, right?
Yeah, that's true. And I also find that, what we think of as blue and red, trapped in this kind of political bubble, I think is not really applicable to the everyday citizen on the street. And I kind of use my in-laws as a gauge of where the people are at, because they are very down-to-earth, apolitical people. Some of them vote Democrat, but if you were to talk to them about issues, if you were to talk to them about the things that they care about, they're trending conservative. And so the soil is there to be tilled to turn a place like this red, and we've seen it happen elsewhere. Florida is a great example.
Now that you're in office, and let's play off of your in-laws for a second, because I have a similar story with some, you know, aspects of my own family, but they're not in-laws this time. They're on my own side of the family. That if we were to talk about issues, they would be pretty traditional and conservative. You start talking about political branding, and there's a deviation to the norm, and they're. We have been struggling on the right how to for as long as, again, as long as I can remember, how to get the kinds of people you and I are talking about to vote our way. That there is some, as if there's like a message that we haven't unlocked or a talking point we haven't figured out to get people to that claim to have a lot of the viewpoints that Republicans typically run on to actually vote Republican. Meanwhile, on the other side, they just don't. I think you see it now in the legislature with them in control. I saw it work. I saw it working for 2 years with MSNBC. All right. And so when you're at the policy making level like you are, or you're at the elite media level at an MSNBC where I was, in both of those cases, you and I are getting a very up close viewpoint of the other side, how their ecosystem, how they operate, what they really think, and how they and how they message to each other and everything else. We're getting a glimpse most of our own people will never get up close and personal. And I can't stress to our people enough, Walter, how different their ecosystem is than ours. And you're seeing the symptom of it in Minnesota, where, you know, they win one election in your legislature in 2022, and they're not instantly saying, okay, we got lucky here, this was supposed to be a red wave, how do we hold on to this? They immediately, day one, that's what we would do. Like we could have, forget, well, Steve, now Mike Johnson's got a two-seat, it wouldn't matter if he had a 42-seat majority, all right? They'd still be up there saying, all right, how do we hold on to this? We don't want to lose these districts. Their ecosystem and frame of reference, and it's just day one, they show up in the dead of winter in Minneapolis, and they're like, all right, man, San Francisco today, San Francisco tomorrow, San Francisco forever. And it's just like, the conviction level is just dramatically different. And unless you see it like I did at MSNBC, where you see it right now where you are in a legislature like Minnesota, I think our people truly don't understand how different their ecosystem and habitat is compared to our own.
There's no question about it. I think one way to view it that is probably pretty accurate is the difference between wartime thinking and peacetime thinking. Mm-hmm. We tend, Republicans, conservatives, however you want to characterize it, we tend to come from a very kind of civilian-oriented peacetime way of looking at the world, and we also, because we're actual classical liberals, we believe in things like value exchange and transaction and actually being of value to somebody else and producing things that have value and trading value for value. That's not the economic or moral frame that the left is coming from. They view the current state of society as power.
Yes. They see everything power. Is a will to power. Narratives, political access, everything is will to power. Everything is.
Absolutely correct. And so, and I think it's, that's our handicap, one of our handicaps. There's a few. But that's one of our biggest handicaps, is that we fail to recognize that they are operating with a different currency and the exchange rate is done.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, if we're going to,
in this case, we're the Native Americans trying to give colonial armies wampum while they have guns. Right? That's yes. Essentially what the roles are now reversed. Well, we've got this wampum to trade. Well, we actually brought guns and we're not going to trade. Okay? We've got a trade called, we've got weapons that are bigger than yours, so we'll be taking your land. Now, that's kind of what you're saying, right? That this is kind of what, where they are. They have a they're operating under a different moral framework than we are.
Absolutely. I mean, and it's so brazen with the Democrats up here in Minnesota. I mean, it goes to, and this may seem like a petty example, but it goes so far as them moving to change our state flag.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not even going to let us vote on it. They're having 13 people decide what our flag is going to be to represent 6 million. I mean, that's the type of thing. What does a conqueror do when he gets done?
Yep.
He plants his flag right in soil.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. You know, he defiles the symbols that were there and erects his own.
Correct.
That's what's going on here in Minnesota. And people have a hard time for whatever reason. And I think it's a multitude of things. But I think one of the most base level things is that people don't want it to be true. They don't want to believe that other people are bad. What drives me nuts is the moral equivocation and this idea of both sides do it and always kind of nipping at the neck of fellow conservatives for their tone and taking things too far and being quote unquote extreme. And my question to that is always, extreme relative to what? Right? Like what's the center that you are making your judgments?
Yeah, what's the center of castrate kids? What's the moderate position on that? Yeah.
Right.
What's the moderate position of allow drug cartels to operate unencumbered on your border and create the largest human trafficking enterprise in human history? What's the middle to that? Do you know? I don't know. Yeah.
Well, and I think the good news, to the extent there is any, I mean, you were talking earlier about being black-pilled and white-pilled, and I vacillate one way or the other depending on the day of the week.
Me too. Yeah.
However, what I do see as positive is just the impact of when truth is told. It's been astounding to me because I didn't know what to expect coming into this job. And I told the people who endorsed me at our convention, I'm just going to tell the truth in every way that I can.
I'm just going to do the most dangerous thing of all, but go ahead. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I'm just going to tell the truth and see what happens. Maybe it's the shortest term anybody's ever had. Maybe it's one term and I'm out. I don't know, but I'm just going to tell the truth. And I expected to be attacked from all angles, and maybe it's because I'm in the minority under a trifecta that I've been passed over, so to speak, by the angel of death. But so far, people have been so inspired just by virtue of the fact that I'm willing to say certain things and say them in a certain way. And it's because I understand the importance of truth, right? Like, it's not me. Anybody can do this. I think you and I talked about that when you were up here in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can do this. It's the truth. The power of the truth is what moves people and inspires people. It's like a torch in a dark cave. Mm-hmm. People are going to follow it, right? And so there's uncapped potential. Like, there's no ceiling on how high the truth can go and how high the truth can take us if more people are willing to speak it. And I get the sense that those seeds are starting to germinate here in the state of Minnesota.
That's a good, encouraging place to end it. It starts with just being willing to tell the truth. Good to see you, Walter. We'll have you back too, brother. All right.
Sounds good. Appreciate
you got it, man. Finish the race. Thank you.
All right.
We did grill out this weekend for family dinner with the temperatures in the 80s. And I grilled up the rest of the burgers from Backyard Butchers. And we didn't have enough for the whole family, so we had to run to the store. And so we had the store-bought corn-fed hamburgers there, and they were good. And then we had the grass-fed ones from Backyard Butchers, man. And I'm just telling you could taste the difference. I mean, they were excellent. They're delivering to your door American-raised and harvested meat from right here in American backyards, dinner for farm to table, ranch to table. It's your source for beef and chicken from American farmers, ranchers, delivering the cuts right to your doorsteps every single month, grass-fed and grass-finished, and the meat does taste amazing. I mean, I tasted the difference this weekend myself. All right, you can get 20% off your entire order by using the code DACE when you subscribe to Backyard Butchers, and you'll get an additional 10% off and free shipping if you end up subscribing there, too. All right, so go to backyardbutchers.com/DACE. Find out why they've got over 500,000 happy customers across the country. So many of them have given 5-star reviews as well. All right, so Backyard Butchers, all one word, backyardbutchers.com/DACE, and get an additional 10% off and free shipping if you subscribe. Backyardbutchers.com/DACE. All right, Todd, we have about 90 seconds left. Your thoughts here to close it out.
Providential timing on the day show. Once again, it happens a lot. Riley Gaines and Walter Hudson, two people you had never heard of just a couple of years ago. Why do you know about them now? Yeah, just what Walter was talking about. They told the truth, and they decided, I'm going to do it. Let's try this.
Let's just tell the truth and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Funny how it works. They've been blessed. They've been blessed. Look at, they come on. They laugh. They do it with a smile on their face. You know, we still have the opportunity to do this and do this in a way where victory can and will come quickly. And it's not going to take all of us. It's just going to take some of us. Right now, there's almost none of us. Won't you be part of it? Step forward. Tell the truth. Give it a try.
I love the practicality of what he said there at the end. I just decided I'm going to step forward and tell the truth. Let's find out. Let's see what happens when we do that. We're just going to tell the truth. Like when post-Pentecost, when Peter shows up, gives like the first post-Pentecost sermon, right? He doesn't have like some like seven-step evangelism plan. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like they haven't consulted with any church growth consultants about how we're going to add to our ranks.
I'm not ashamed.
Yeah, you just step forward and we're just tell the truth, okay? Yeshua is your Messiah. You killed him. He needed to repent. Just told the truth. I had to repent too. So you got to repent. Look what happened, right? Romans 8:28.